Well, hey everyone, here we are for this week's episode of The Boundless Show. I am Lisa Anderson. Later on in the show, the fabulous Danny Huerta is here because he is going to talk to someone who is desperately in love with a non-Christian. Okay, so you know how we feel about that, but how do you overcome? How do you break this off? I have had a sister in this very spot, and so he's going to offer some awesome insight on that. For our culture segment, we have Scott Sauls. He's the author of the book Befriend, and this is really kind of the whole concept of friendship being costly, and it does make us vulnerable. And so what does that look like to really draw people into your life in a way that is meaningful? Okay, here we are for our roundtable, and the first thing I have to say is happy Thanksgiving weekend to all of you. Those of us in the U.S., we usually get Thanksgiving off unless you're in retail or somewhere else depressing where you don't get any time off ever. No holidays, no weekends, nothing. And I have to always say happy whatever Thanksgiving to the Canadians, because you were either last week or something. They always get left out. And all you other countries, and you do exist, just be thankful along with us, okay? So now that I got that out of the way, I want to welcome Josh, Diane, and Helen. Hey, guys.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for having us.
Woohoo. All right. Well, this is kind of weird. I mean, this isn't necessarily a Thanksgiving topic, but I think we can all be thankful that we will get wisdom out of this, because heading into the holiday season is one of the biggest pickup times for dating. This is when everyone is in that mad dash to get someone for the Christmas party, to have someone for New Year's, to like head towards Valentine's Day. People get crazy. People start going online and getting like 12 online dating profiles. I know, because maybe I have done it. But all that to say, what that tends to precipitate is getting into a relationship and moving it along too fast. And so we actually found an article here at Boundless called 13 Signs That Your Relationship Is Moving Way Too Fast. And I think some of these are true. Diane's going to speak from the perspective of a mentor who mentors a lot of couples in their relationships, because she kind of drug her feet with her own husband. I think we need to be honest. She put, she put him off like at least four times, I think, according to him. So clearly she didn't have to learn from this. But the rest of us, maybe a little bit. But what, when you guys think of the whole concept of relationships moving too fast, how have you seen that play out either in your own life or others?
I think it happens a lot when the emotions are very intense. Mm-hmm. So when you get that initial attraction to somebody, and then you have good conversations, so you feel like this person's the one, I love them, when it's just the fact that you really, really like them and you've had a good time, so you want to pursue further relational statuses. And so the relationship progresses after that because the emotions are so very intense.
Mm-hmm. I think piggybacking off of that and what you just mentioned, Lisa, going into the holiday season is, I think it also plays into specifically in the online realm that you have those interactions that are either by text or email or whatever format's being used, platform. You start revealing, and since there's not the person right in front of you, that boundary of accountability is removed. Mm-hmm. So you kind of naturally start, as Josh said, going into it a little bit further and being more advanced emotionally, mm-hmm. Which then kind of, when you finally meet them, puts you ahead of the game where you might have been in person.
Yeah.
Kind of losing gauge on each other of what should be right.
Yeah, it is so true. It's so easy to go so deep so fast because, again, it's not like you're going to get into that kind of conversation when you're mini golfing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not. It just is much more easy, I think, to go down that road.
Mm-hmm. I think, too, that people want to reveal more than they should. But mm-hmm. so, especially if it's online, you're getting all this information without the personality behind it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. you fall in love with something that maybe isn't even true. It's mm-hmm. not even the real person. So, oh, he likes the same thing. Oh, she likes the same thing. So we must be a perfect match for each other. But you haven't considered what are the moral values of that person? What are their personality traits? Who are they for real? Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, but we match up. So this is it. And of course, mm-hmm. the more desperate you are, the more you hope that it's true.
Yeah, that's so true. Interestingly enough, number three on the list is you find yourself talking about really deep things before you've even had a chance to discuss the basics, which becomes very true. I mean, even like basic information about a person's background or their family or kind of where they are, in life and stuff like that. All of a sudden, I think, Diane, what you said kind of sparked this in me. It's that desire to set ourselves apart and be unique. So we're going to share more and more. And if I just reveal this about myself, or if I just say this that makes me more interesting or something, it's like we're mm-hmm. trying to compete on some kind of weird game show to be noticed or to be set apart. Okay, number one on the list, I want to delve into this because this actually has to do with, it can be an online kind of thing, but I see it in kind of the boots on the ground relationships a lot. You find yourself spending most or all of your time together early on in the relationship. You see each other every single day, or you have seen each other every single day since you got together. This, I think, is kind of that criminal act among daters of you start dating and all of a sudden this person disappears. They leave their friend group. They leave their church group. They leave. All of a sudden you're just staring into one another's eyes 24/7. And it is so true. It's again, and I think this goes back mm-hmm. to what Josh was saying. You feel that connection and you're just like, I have mm-hmm. to be with this person every minute of the day. Thoughts on that?
We just did some pre-marriage counseling with a young couple that this is exactly what happened. Mm. And they said, well, we've only known each other for 3 months, but we've seen each other every day. Mm. So I know him so well. And he's like, and I know her so well because we saw each other every day. So that counts as a year mm-hmm. because we've seen each other every day for 3 months. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, that's lovely, but that's not real life. Mm-hmm. What is this person like in the winter? What are they like in the summer? What are they like during Christmas? Well, I don't know, but it doesn't matter because we saw each other every day. And they rushed towards a wedding, even though we're like, you know, you guys really should settle down. No, too late. We love each other. That's it. And they got married mm-hmm. within 6 months.
Yeah.
So that they were in love with being in love. And I think when the rubber hits the road, this will be an interesting story. And at least we've maintained the relationship because I have a feeling mm-hmm. we may see them again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it reminds me of the, you know, I think so much of this has been legitimized by reality TV shows mm-hmm. where it's like if you, you know, and I've said this before in the show, I can make a relationship work with anyone as long as we're on Tahiti. Okay. If I'm not working
and getting paid for it.
Exactly. If I'm on a tropical island with someone who's very good looking and I have just, you know, all these other things at my disposal, I feel like I could be pretty successful there. But I don't feel like that translates into real life. And so it is so true that so many people get into these relationships and they do a lot of play. They're just, well, let's go do this. Let's go kayaking. Let's go climbing. Let's go. Like, that's going to be what their relationship is about. I don't know. I just find it to be problematic.
I think it's also, from my experience, most of my rushing into relationships came before I was a Christian. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to go into those fun stories. I will confess all those sins later.
Well, that is one of the, like, you've been in past intense relationships, yeah. And so it becomes a pattern.
Guilty, yeah. Guilty, guilty.
Yeah.
I would have a whole line of Hallmark and Lifetime movies. Mm-hmm. It would be great. But what came out of it was, I caught myself realizing that we are being acting like we were married before we were. Mm-hmm. Everything was whether, not maybe every single day, because I don't think I could handle that. Mm-hmm. but, you know, we're doing activities, buying groceries together and mm-hmm. maybe living in the same house or doing activities that are very much reserved for being marriage. Mm-hmm. So the idea of going on to marriage kind of started nulling and slowing things down because there wasn't really a difference between being married and this rushed in relationship. But only that lasted for so long before it kind of all came to a head because there was nothing foundational about it. It was just following the world and this is what you do and you have these interactions and it just happens and you're in this relationship that doesn't have a strong support underneath it or mm-hmm. beginning.
Mm-hmm. I tend to think that one of the other ones, too, and I think there's a variation of this on the list, is this idea that when people start speaking up about the relationship, if maybe they're throwing up a couple red flags or they're even saying, like, you know, hey, have you thought about this or whatever, and you are ignoring all of that, that's, again, kind of rushing headlong into it and just saying, oh, well, you don't know us or you don't really know what you're talking about or if you only knew him in this situation, whatever. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that that kind of moves it. It's almost like they don't want to know the real truth, so they're mm-hmm. just going to storm ahead and hope for the best.
And I think that's being in love with being in love. And so you've kind of bypassed the person. They are just the person. But I'm so in love with being in love that this has got to be it. I've never felt this before. We have found, too, that any kind of physical relationship that's brought into it early will also accelerate it, because you think, oh, well, we're so compatible on so many levels. And therefore, this must be it. And then that physical relationship takes over actually getting to know the person, because you spend your time doing that than truly communicating and respecting each other.
Yeah. Why do you guys think, another one that they bring up on the list is the whole idea of dropping the word love early on in the relationship? I mean, why, I mean, obviously I think Hollywood has played into this too, but why do you think people are so eager to go there? Because it seems a little bit counterintuitive to a culture that is kind of shy of commitment or not wanting to make, you know, overt gestures or give away too much, you know, on that front, but kind of play it cool. But yet it's so easy to just say, well, I love you. Or, I mean, are we still just trying to secure people or what?
I think that comes from a skewed idea of what love actually is, which we believe because of Hollywood, like you said, love is an emotion. And so when we feel that strong, intense emotion, we believe that is love, but that's just not what love is.
Yeah.
It's a commitment. It's a choice to live for the other person, for their betterment, and not for how you feel.
Yeah.
And so I think when people feel an intense emotion, they automatically want to jump to the idea of love.
Yeah. You had said, Josh, I think you said before we started taping that you had one relationship where some friends kind of stepped in and helped you put the brakes on it, which is kind of surprising to me because I consider you kind of a level-headed guy. So what was going on there?
Okay, so I was a freshman in college when you're never making the best decisions in the world. And it's like my first couple of weeks there, first month there, and girls expressed interest in me. And so I was curious, and there was this one lovely young lady that I expressed interest in. And one of her friends actually said, Josh, you deserve better. You deserve someone better than her. So her,
what was it, because she was interested in you? And so
I think it was just the fact that she liked me. It was a small Christian university, so it was part of the gig. You get a girlfriend, you move on after that, ring by spring eventually. And so I was jumping full force into that experience, and it was a humbling experience to know that one of her friends would say, hey, you deserve better. And that gave me pause for future.
Yeah. Well, hopefully she went back to this girl and was like, just FYI, I cannot recommend you for relationships. And here's why. And let's work on some growth in this area, because that's a little sketchy. What, Diane, what are some instances where you, either when you found people for premarital or even before that, that you've had to intercept certain things that you saw were problematic, and how did you address them?
You know, we had one couple, and this was such a great question for Roger to ask out of nowhere. And he said to the young lady, so if John gets cancer, what would you do? And she said, oh, I would leave him. And it was like, well, why? And she said, because I wouldn't want to watch him suffer. I love him so much that to watch him suffer would break my heart. Now, John leans over and goes, isn't she wonderful? That she loves me so much that she wouldn't want to watch me suffer. So now Roger asks him, so John, what would you do if Heidi gets cancer? And he said, I would be there for her and I would take care of her. And she goes, isn't he wonderful? So, you know, you sit there dumbfounded for a moment, and then Roger goes, okay, John, did you just hear what she said? And he's like, yes. And you are okay with that. I love her. So you saw selfish, narcissistic, run. And he married her. And it is, you know, you can give your advice, but that was another situation where they just plowed through and got married.
Wow. Okay, what about the idea of bringing family and friends into a relationship? And of course, the waters are even muddier when you're maybe someone who's dating a single parent, and there's always that kind of, where do I bring the kids into this? But just that whole idea of enfolding this person's life into yours. I think that once you do that, it becomes harder to break a relationship off. All of a sudden, you know, I've had friends where, you know, they've dated a guy for like 3 weeks, a month, and all of a sudden they're getting his mother a birthday gift. And I'm like, why do you know his mother at this level, at this point? Where is this going? And they're doing brunch and they're doing all this. And then they don't want to break it off because now I love his mother so much that, you know, how I want to keep that friendship. But what do you see? Where is there a good balance between, you know, okay, I need to actually find out what his family's like, because you do marry into a family, and having that balance of, okay, I need to know some stuff about them without getting too codependent or super attached on them too early.
You know, that may go back to the in-laws or the future in-laws or the potential in-laws, because I know with our kids, we did set up some boundaries with how much we were going to be involved with the person's parents. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things with Serafina, because she was older, Roger would meet with all of the men that she would date as a mentor. Mm-hmm. And then at one point with Jason, he said, okay, if this doesn't work, can I still have your dad? And it was like, yes, you could have my dad. But he had set up that this is the boundary as a mentor, not necessarily because this is your dad, therefore, mm-hmm. this is a package. Mm-hmm. So I think it depends on the in-laws. Are they willing to set up boundaries around? Now, if they're not, mm-hmm. then you have to be the one to set up the boundaries as the dating person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, what do you guys think? We touched on this at the very beginning, this idea that many of the problems we see in relationships moving too fast, moving forward, getting too deep, is this underlying sense of desperation of, this may be my last chance. I got to hold on to this at all costs. What if no one else comes along? What if, I mean, I feel like now, you know, even the whole idea of, I've dated this person for X number of months. I don't want to lose that ground that I've gained. I don't want to start all over again. How do we counteract that, especially as believers, in just learning to trust God with that, but also kind of infusing just some common sense into the process of really helping people say, okay, yeah, because it's so true. I mean, mm-hmm. I have seen this play out time and time again.
I've personally been in that situation where I'm still in my 30s, but in my 30s, I haven't married yet. All of my friends are married and I have this relationship that probably isn't the best choice. We're not in the right same mindsets, and I just kept investing into it, and we kept plugging through even though I knew it was wrong. And mm-hmm. everyone around me, and my family actually sat me down and went, we don't think this is right or good or healthy. And it was really hard, and I sat there and defended, no, we have this, mm-hmm. and we have this. And my cousin finally said to me, I think God is testing you, and you so desperately want to be married, you're looking at that beyond what you know what is right. Mm-hmm. It was really hard to hear, mm-hmm. and I didn't hear it well at first, but then when I took time back and started realizing what was going on, I realized that the marriage was an idol to me, and mm-hmm. that's what I wanted more than anything else. I'm very thankful for their love and for their leadership and for their willingness to step in and say that to me. Mm-hmm. 'Cause who knows where it would have led to if I just kept going on and we eventually got married and had this not great marriage. But it's really hard to sit there in that desperation 'cause you want it so strongly. But ultimately it comes back to, do I want that over what God truly wants for me? And that is so much more richer than a halfway marriage.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You know, we've always said anyone can get married. Mm-hmm. Anyone can. But it's waiting for the right person, or maybe not even a person, because, you know, 50 years is a long time if you're married to the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. 1 year is a long time if you're not married to the right guy. So it's, are you willing to wait and really test the boundaries? Take the time to see, because if he really loves me or if she really loves me, she'll be willing to wait for mm-hmm. me. And I can say that from experience with, you know, poor Raj. But it's like I had to see that he really did love me and had to be worked out. Like you were saying, mm-hmm. it's not an emotion. I needed to see by an act of his will mm-hmm. that he was willing to work this through and mm-hmm. say, I'm not going anywhere, mm-hmm. but I don't love you like you love me. I know. Just let me love you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he did. And I was like, okay, 39 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. A large part of marriage is sacrifice. And if the other person in the relationship is not willing to sacrifice their time and their patience, then it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. That's what love is. It's an intentional choice to sacrifice yourself for the other person. And if that means waiting 1 to 7 years, it's worth it.
I think it's so easy for us to forget our identity in the midst of this too, because I, you know, and I've talked to friends about this. I've even, you know, been tempted to think this myself in moments of desperation, is just going into that whole thing of, well, we're all broken people. And so, you know, I'm going to date someone broken and I can't just expect perfection. And then you start kind of chipping away at really a list of criteria that are very important, you know. And so I always say when I talk to young adults, yes, we are broken people. We are all sinners. You will marry another sinner. You are a sinner, but no one has to sign up for a project or a mess. Mm-hmm. God is not calling you to rescue someone. He is not calling you to marry a non-Christian so he can use you to save them. Mm-hmm. He can do that on his own. Mm-hmm. We don't have to sign up for messes, y'all. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like, let God work in someone first and be healthy and marry a healthy person. Mm-hmm. I think that's just a great way to evidence God's goodness in our lives.
It's hard in a Christian culture, though, because marriage looks like the end all.
Yeah.
And then the next one is children. Yeah. So if you don't have marriage, or you have marriage and you don't have children, somehow you've failed as this Christian person in this community. And we've just really put such high expectations on ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we all have to trust God. Married people have to trust God with their spouses, you know, just like we have to trust God with our singleness and our future spouses as well. So thanks, you guys, for being on.
Thank you.